Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Brian Lynn.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. Today on the show, Andrew Smith brings us Ask a Teacher. Ana Mateo has words and their stories. We close with an American story. Today, we hear the Learning English original, The Boy on Gravesend Road. But first,
the hug between the two women lasted a long time. An 85-year-old woman put her arms around a younger woman she had not seen for months. She asked her a series of questions in a song-like way. How are you? How is your husband? How are the kids? How are your cows? Are you on good terms with your neighbors? Prudencia ne namukopwa stopped the song to permit the younger woman to answer. The pattern is familiar to her because she has been doing it for many years. Ego. Emmeline Nziamana answered over and over in the local Kirundi language. Yes. The two women were performing a greeting of their ancestors. A group of neighbors watched with surprise. Many were seeing their first performance of the traditional form of musical greeting, known to Burundians as akazehe. It is performed only by women. Akazehe is becoming less common, but cultural officials, teachers, and others say the greeting is worth keeping. During disease outbreaks, public health officials urged people to limit close contact. Such recommendations affected the greeting. Among young people in Burundi, it is hard to find those who know what akazehe means. It is even harder to find someone who can perform it. Sandrine Kitonze is a cultural advisor in the office of the governor of Ngozi province. She said people stopped doing the greeting, even though akazehe made you feel that the person who greets you loves you. Some experts have noted akazehe could help lead to a feeling of unity in Burundi. The country is now largely peaceful, following a period of deadly civil war and political unrest. Annunciate Baragahorana is a teacher in the province of Bujumbura. She told the Associated Press that when she visited the Central Plateau area as a young girl, she was surprised and a little uneasy when women hugged and greeted her in this song-like way. I wanted her to finish quickly, even if it was sweet words to hear. Baragahorana said she feared akazehe may disappear because of the fear of spreading diseases. Now, she said, people greet each other from a distance. Namukobwa lives in Ngozi, a hilly province in Burundi's north. On a recent morning, she was sitting on a mat outside when she saw Ndiamana, the visiting daughter of a former neighbor. She rose and welcomed the woman as if she were her own daughter. I felt that the first love she had when I was just a girl is kept until now, said Ndiamana, a broadcaster in Ngozi. This means that I am still her daughter. Isaac Nikobiba is an anthropologist in Bujumbura. He said a custom such as akazehe should be kept at all costs because of its role in protecting families. Among communities that practice it, women could tell elder women about any problems at home. That could bring support from the extended family, he said. Nikobiba said the threat to akazehe is part of other effects of modernization. He explained how the custom worked to help younger women. Normally, before starting a home in traditional Burundi, the girl would first receive advice from her father's sister. She would tell the girl, "I will come to greet you after a certain time." Nikobiba added that during that greeting, the young woman could report any problems. The support from elders would help them develop better mental health for the young family, he said. Floride Ntakirutimana was among the small group of women who gathered to watch Namukopwa greeting Nziamana. She said she grew up in a farming community where no mother could perform akazehe. She only heard of it through radio programs. After watching, she wanted to learn akazehe herself. "I feel better," Ntakirutimana said, "and I saw that it was good." I'm Jill Robbins.
Hello. This week on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question from Haruna in Japan about the usage of the words near and nearby. Dear teacher, today I have a question about two words, near and nearby. What is the difference between these two words? Thank you, and best regards, Haruna. I'm happy to answer this question, Haruna. Both words can mean close in distance to something. The word near also has other meanings, as we will see. We can put the word nearby at the end of a sentence. For example, if you are in someone's house and a person in the house says,
"The market is nearby,"
that means the market is close to the house. The speaker does not need to say the word house because the word nearby means close to the place already stated or known. However, when we use the word near to say where something is, we say both places. The following example shows this.
Their house is near the market.
The following two examples also show this difference in usage between nearby and near.
The doctor's office is nearby. The doctor's office is near the bank.
We can also use nearby as an adjective before a noun, as in this example.
Pollution from a nearby factory makes the air unhealthy to breathe.
Next, let's look at three other ways we can use the word near. We can use it as an adverb to express the idea that something will happen soon in the future, as in this example.
The end of our trip is near.
We can also use near as a compound adjective, as in the following example.
That old car is still in near perfect condition.
Remember that when we write compound adjectives, we must put a hyphen or short line connecting the two adjectives. Lastly, we can use the word near as a verb, meaning getting close to in time, as in this example.
The building project is nearing completion.
For our readers and listeners, what are your questions about American English? We'd like to hear from you. Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And please include where you are from in your email, too. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Andrew Smith.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. We all make mistakes. So we have the expression, to err is human. People who accept responsibility or blame will often say, I'm sorry, or I was wrong. Others might say, it's my fault, or I apologize. Often, friends use expressions like, that was on me, or my bad. But there is another way to say that you accept responsibility, or admit that you made a mistake. Some English speakers may say, mea culpa. If that does not sound like English, that's because it isn't. American dictionary publisher Merriam-Webster says that mea culpa means through my fault in Latin. The phrase comes from a prayer of confession in the Catholic Church. By itself, the expression is used to mean it was my fault or I apologize. Mea culpa is also a noun. People caught doing something wrong often give or issue a mea culpa. For example, when an official is caught doing something wrong, she might issue a statement that includes a mea culpa. Let's hear an example.
The mayor's mea culpa did not change the minds of voters, and she lost the election.
Mea culpa is one of many English terms that come from the Latin word culpa, which means guilt. Other examples include culpable, culprit, and exculpate. When someone deserves blame for something, especially something harmful, we say he is culpable for the outcomes. For example,
investigators said that the car maker was culpable for thousands of accidents because of faulty brakes.
A culprit is a person guilty of a crime or a fault. That is why police officers often call a person guilty of a crime a culprit. And the word exculpate means to clear someone from suspected fault or guilt. Here's an example.
The husband was exculpated of his wife's death when she was found alive, living in Paris, under a fake name.
And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
Program American Stories. Here is The Boy on Gravesend Road.
Kelly Ryan was making dinner. Her 10-year-old son, Benjamin, was watching television in the living room. Or at least she thought he was.
Benny boy, do you want black beans or red beans?
Red beans,
oh,
Mama.
Don't do that, Ben. You scared me half to death. You're gonna get it.
Ben had come up quietly right behind her.
Oh, I'll get back to you, you stinker.
Kelly goes to the phone, but as soon as she lays her hand on it, the ringing stops.
How strange. Oh, the beans.
Kelly turns her attention back to cooking. As soon as she does, the phone rings again.
Honey, can you get that?
Hello? Oh, hi. Yes, I remember. Sure, it sounds fun. Let me ask my mom. Can you hold? She might want to talk to your mom. Okay. See you tomorrow.
Ben, your rice and beans are on the table. Let's eat. So, what was that call about?
That was Wallace Gray. You know him from class?
Mm-hmm.
He wants to play tomorrow. Can I go home with him after school? Please, Mom, I get bored around here waiting for you after work.
But I don't even know his parents. Maybe I should talk to them.
You can't, Mom. He was with his babysitter. He said his parents wouldn't be home until late tonight, and they would leave before he went to school in the morning. Please, Mom, Wallace lives right over on Gravesend Road. It's a 5-minute walk from here. Please?
Well, okay. What's so great about this guy anyway? You've got a ton of friends to play with.
I know, but Wallace is just different. He's got a lot of imagination.
The school week passes, and Ben starts to go home almost every day with Wallace. Kelly notices a change in her son. He seems tired and withdrawn. His eyes do not seem to really look at her. They seem lifeless. On Friday night, she decides they need to have a talk.
Sweetie, what's going on with you? You seem so tired and far away. Is something wrong? Did you and your new friend have a fight?
No, Mom. We've been having a great time. There's nothing wrong with us. Why don't you like Wallace? You don't even know him, but you don't trust him.
Benjamin, what are you talking about? I don't dislike Wallace. You're right. I don't know him. You just don't seem like yourself. You've been very quiet the past few nights.
I'm sorry, Mom. I guess I'm just tired. I've a great time with Wallace. We play games like cops and robbers. But they seem so real that half of the time I feel like I'm in another world. It's hard to explain. It's like...
I think the word you're looking for is intense.
Yeah, that's it. It's intense.
Well, tell me about today. What kind of game did you play?
We were train robbers, or Wallace was. I was the station manager. Wallace was running through a long train from car to car. He had stolen a lot of money and gold from the passengers. I was chasing right behind him, moving as fast as I could. Finally, he jumps out of the train into the station to make his escape. But I block his path. He grabs a woman on the station platform. She screams, "No, no!" But he yells, "Let me through or she dies." So I let him go.
What happened then?
Well, that's what was weird and, like you said, intense. Wallace threw the lady onto the tracks and laughed. He said that's what evil characters do in the games. They always do the worst.
Later, after Ben went to bed, Kelly turned on the 11 o'clock news. She was only half listening as she prepared a list of things to do the next day on Halloween.
Okay, let's see. Grocery shopping, Halloween decorating. Oh, the dog's got to go to the groomer. I've got to go to the hardware store, clean up the garden, and the...
instantly. Reports say it appears she was pushed off the station platform into the path of the oncoming train.
No.
It happened during rush hour today. Some witnesses reported seeing two boys running and playing near the woman. But police say they did not see any images like that on security cameras at the station.
No.
In other news,
it can't be. The station is an hour away. They couldn't have gotten there. How could they? It's just a coincidence.
The wind blew low and lonely that night. Kelly slept little. She dreamed she was waiting for Ben at a train station. Then she saw him on the other side, running with another little boy. It must be Wallace, she thought. The little boy went in and out of view. Then, all of a sudden, he stopped and looked across the tracks directly at her. He had no face. Saturday morning was bright and sunny, a cool October day. Kelly made Ben eggs and toast and watched him eat happily.
You know, Benny boy, a woman did get hurt at the train station yesterday. She actually got hit by a train. Isn't that strange?
She looked at Ben.
What do you mean, Mom?
Well, you and Wallace were playing that game yesterday about being at a train station. You said he threw a woman off the platform and she was killed by a train.
Kelly felt like a fool, even saying the words. She was speaking to a 10-year-old who had been playing an imaginary game with another 10-year-old. What was she thinking?
I said we played that yesterday. I did? No, we played that a few days ago, I think. It was just a really good game. Really intense. Yesterday, we played pirates. I got to be Captain Frank on the pirate ship, the Arg. Wallace was Davy, the first mate. But he tried to rebel and take over the ship, so I made him walk the plank. Davy walked off into the sea and drowned. Wallace told me I had to order him to walk the plank. He said that's what evil pirates do.
Well, I guess he's right. I don't know any pirates, but I do hear they're pretty evil.
So can I play with Wallace today when you are doing your errands? Please, Mom? I don't want to go shopping and putting up Halloween decorations.
Oh, whatever. I guess so. I'll pick you up at Wallace's house at about 5:30 so you can get ready for trick-or-treating. Where does he live again?
Gravesend Road. I don't know the street number, but there are only two houses on each side. His is the second one on the left.
Okay, I can find that easy enough. Do you still want me to pick up a ghost costume for you?
Yep. Oh, and guess what, Mom? Wallace says he's a ghost, too. I suppose we'll haunt the neighborhood together.
Everywhere Kelly went that day was crowded. She spent an hour and a half just at the market. When she got home, decorating the house for Halloween was difficult. But finally, she had it all up the way she wanted.
Oh, gosh, it's 5 already. I don't even have Ben's costume.
She jumped into her car and drove to Wilson Boulevard. The party store was just a few blocks away. Kelly soon found the ghost costume that Ben wanted. She bought it and walked out of the store.
Hey, Kelly, long time no see. How's Benjamin doing?
Eileen, wow, it's great to see you. How's Matt? We've been so busy since the school year started, we haven't seen anyone.
Well, Matt's good. I mean, he broke his arm last month, So no sports for him. It is driving him crazy. But at least he's got a lot of time for school now.
That's good, yeah.
Anyway, Matt was wondering why Benny Boy never comes by anymore. We saw him running around the neighborhood after school last week. It looks like he's having fun, but he's always alone. We don't need to set up a play date. Ben should know that. You just tell him to come by anytime.
Wait a minute. Alone? What do you mean, alone? He started playing with a new friend, a Wallace somebody, after school. Like, every day this past week. Ben hasn't been alone. Wallace Gray. That's it. Do you know him? Does Matt?
Oh, Kelly, I'm sure he's a fine kid. I don't know him, but don't worry. Ben's got great taste in friends. We know that. I'm sure he really wasn't alone. He was probably just playing hide-and-seek or something. I didn't mean to worry you. I guess everybody's on edge because of what happened to the Godwin boy this morning.
Kelly suddenly felt cold and scared. What Godwin boy? And what happened to him? She was not sure she wanted to know, but she had to ask.
Frank Godwin's youngest boy, Davy, the 5-year-old. You know Frank. We call him Captain. He used to be a ship captain. Well, this morning, the rescue squad found Davy in Blackheart Lake. They also found a little toy boat that his dad had made for him. Davy and his dad named it the Arg. Davy must have been trying to sail it. It's so sad.
Wait, he's dead?
Yes. Davy drowned.
Where's Blackheart Lake?
It's right off Gravesend Road, right behind that little cemetery. That's why they call it Gravesend. Kelly, where are you going?
I've got to get Benjamin.
Kelly raced down Main Street. She had no idea who Wallace Gray was or how he was involved in any of this. But she did not trust him, and she knew her child was in danger. Finally, she was at Gravesend Road.
Only 2 houses on each side.
She remembered what Ben had told her.
Right behind that little cemetery.
And what Eileen had told her. Kelly got out of the car and walked down the street. She looked around.
The second one on the left.
She could see the lake. Some fog was coming up as the sky darkened on this Halloween night. But there was no second house. Instead, what lay before her was grass and large white stones. The cemetery. Kelly walked through the gate into the yard of graves.
Ben?
No answer. She kept walking.
Ben, answer me. I know you're here.
Again, no answer. But the wind blew and some leaves began to dance around a headstone. Kelly walked slowly toward the grave. Suddenly, the sky blackened, so dark she could not see anything. She felt a force pushing at her. It tried to push her away from the grave, but she knew she had to stay.
Benjamin, Owen, Orr, this is your mother. Come out this second.
No one answered, except for the sound of the blowing wind. The darkness lifted. Silvery moonlight shone down directly onto the old gravestone in front of her. But Kelly already knew whose name she would see.
Wallace Gray, October 31st, 1900 to October 31st, 1910. Some are best when laid to rest.
Kelly took a deep breath, then...
Wallace Gray, this play date is over! Give me back my son! Wallace, you are in time out!
Suddenly, the ground shoots upward like a small volcano. Soil, sticks, and worms fly over Kelly's head and rain down again, followed by her son, who lands beside her.
Ben! Ben!
Mom, are you there? I can't see. All this dirt in my eyes.
Ben, I'm here. I'm here, baby. Right here. Oh, sweet Benny boy. Can you breathe? Are you really okay? What happened? How long were you in there?
I don't know, Mom, but I didn't like it. I didn't like where Wallace lives. I want to go home.
Oh, man, sweetie. Come on. Ben, put your arm around me. Come on.
Mom, one more thing.
What is it, Ben?
I don't want to be a ghost for Halloween.
Our story, The Boy on Gravesend Road, was written and produced by Katie Weaver. The voices were Andrew Bracken, Faith Lapidus, Catherine Cole, Shirley Griffith, and Jim Tedder.
That's all the time we have for today's show, but join us again tomorrow for another VOA Learning English program. Thanks for listening. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Brian Lynn.